Hi, I'm Pastor Ron Fox, one of your Denver neighbors. I saw a TV show that stunned me, and now we're watching it at our church. After abolition, the horrors of slavery changed. Some wondered what to do with free black men and women. This is shocking, but you'll probably realize that it's true. Programs were devised to reduce the number of blacks, and these programs still operate today, so that Hispanics now have surpassed blacks as America's largest minority. Please come watch this powerful program, Ma'afa 21, Saturday, February 19th at 2 p.m. at Berean Bible Church. That's Saturday, February 19th at 2 p.m. at Berean Bible Church, located at 1400 Birch Street. For more information, call Colorado Right to Life. Ma'afa will shock you. So please join me, Pastor Ron Fox, on the 19th as we experience this together, watching Ma'afa 21 at Berean Bible Church at 1400 Birch Street.
One morning, there's truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Yardline.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyar, pastor of Denver Bible Church. Reason number 637 to pull your kids out of the godless public schools. This from outside of Dayton, Ohio. Reason number 637, a Mason High School teacher, physical education teacher, has had sex with five students, and now a grand jury has indicted the teacher on 16 counts of sexual battery and 3 counts of offenses for giving alcohol to underage persons. So that's 16 counts of sexual battery and 3 counts of offenses for giving alcohol to underage students at the school. This is an alleged teacher. An alleged teacher has had sex with 5 students. And so reason number 637, we had a great call yesterday from Pennsylvania. Donald, who said he watched the show back in the 90s, Bob Inyar Live. We were on TV then also and radio, simulcast. And he said that we convinced him to pull his kids out of the public schools. And now it turns out his oldest daughter, he didn't mention this on air, but to our call screener, is just graduating high school from their home school, which is such a thrill. But then the topic came up of charter schools and the temptation by parents, Christian parents, to put their kids in charter school because they convince themselves, and they wrongly convince themselves, they get this false sense of security, like Johnny's third grade teacher in math was a Christian. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Parents convince themselves that this will be better than a typical public school, and this is just a different kind of godless public school. The charter schools are just different kinds of godless public schools, and they'll send all kinds of notices home during the school year, but the one you will never get is, tomorrow we're going to ruin Johnny's mind. You're never going to get that message. That message will never come home from a charter school, nor from a public school. Charter schools are godless public schools. They're just different ways of convincing people to support a godless system and to put your child's eternal welfare into the hands of an administration and a curriculum that is officially godless. And a godless education system for children is inherently immoral. Inherently immoral. So please don't deceive yourselves into thinking, well, it's a tough economy, things are rough, we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to scrimp here and there. And that means that either mom's going to have to go to work for a second paycheck, or we're going to save money on a Christian school tuition, or we don't want to spend the money on Christian homeschool curriculum, and so we're going to put the kids in a godless school that there was a Christian teacher in third grade math. Please don't allow yourselves to be seduced by a false sense of security. That, well, a teacher is the nephew of the great-grandson of a famous person. The one teacher is my mother's cousin who went to church and was baptized when she was 19. Whatever. Don't allow yourself to be deceived with reasons given that turn out to be a false sense of security why it's okay to put your child in a godless public school. Please don't do that. We're in the middle of our telethon, our February telethon to keep Bob and Yurt live on the air another year. In fact, we'll go to Indiana in just one moment. Great, we got a call, Jamie from Indiana, in a moment. But first this, our goal is $20,000, and we need another 27 people to pledge $20 a month. Those are our two goals. Our goals were 100 people to pledge $20 a month, and we're up to 73. 73. This counts our last telethon and now. So if you can pledge $20 a month or more, we'll be up to 74 people toward 100, and we're up to $2,300 on our goal, our needed goal of $20,000 to help us stay on the air on America's most powerful Christian radio station, AM 670 KLTT. Now, let's go to Indiana. Jamie, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, sir. What's up?
Well, cut right to the chase, I guess. It's been a while since we spoke.
Jamie, tell me, I just got a call screener that says Jamie from Indiana. So tell me, how do we know each other?
We helped you with the 1-800-ASPHALT number in Colorado when you were boycotting whites.
Oh, when the whites company, Auschwitz, the whites billion-dollar American construction company, built the nation's largest child-killing center, Planned Parenthood's abortion mill, here in Denver a couple years ago. Jamie, I recall if people called 1-800-ASPHALT, was that the number?
Yeah, that was the number.
1-800-ASPHALT, they got a warning message about whites being a co-conspirator with those who kill unborn children.
Correct.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Well, it was my pleasure. And the situation that brought the call today was my wife is pregnant with twins.
All right.
And she's been hospitalized. Her water broke last Thursday. Partially. It has resealed.
Wow. She tell me again how far along she is.
She will be 23 weeks
23
tomorrow.
Weeks. Wow. So this is very early in her pregnancy, and this is scary because when a baby is born as a preemie, the baby's typically, the biggest concern is the baby's lungs are not sufficiently developed to survive. So every additional hour, every additional day where the baby could grow inside mom is so very important.
Right. And so she's been hospitalized since Thursday. They've been monitoring her very closely. We are at University Hospital at IU-Riley in Indianapolis, one of the best children's hospitals, best NICU units in the country. Mm. However, over the last 72 hours or so, really since we got here, when we got here, they said that baby A's water sac had ruptured. And within 20 minutes of us being at the hospital, they were asking if we would want to deliver baby A to save baby B. Mm. Which is a question that you just aren't ever prepared for.
Yeah, right. Oh, Jamie, I'm so sorry that you guys are in this situation. And so one of the things I'd like to do is to put out a call to our audience. If Lolita Hanks, who's a board member and a spokesman for Colorado Right to Life, she's a nurse practitioner. If she's available to talk with you, if she could call in, and that would be on the air or off the air, that would be just great. So nurse practitioner Lolita Hanks, if you could call the studio here at 800-836-9278. So, Jamie, the questions are especially difficult because children's hospitals all over the country are generally pro-abortion. And while they will work hard to save a baby, they also have no qualms about killing a baby.
Absolutely, Bob. And again, 20 minutes of us being here, they were giving us the option of removing baby A so that baby B would have a better chance of survival.
And what they mean by removing, if now, did they mention a cesarean section?
Not at that point, no.
Because I don't know about your particular circumstance, Jamie, but preemies are so tiny, of course, the younger or based on the conditions of their development, that a vaginal birth could kill them. Knowingly, they would know that could kill that baby. And so an alternative, and this has been done in Denver at University Hospital, but at the insistence of the parents, they said, we will not deliver the baby vaginally. We demand. Now, you can't force another adult human being to do something they refuse to do. So the doctors eventually had to agree, but we insist on a C-section, a cesarean section, to give our child every chance of surviving. And the doctors had never done such a thing ever. And the beautiful little baby boy survived for 24 hours in the loving hands, arms of mom and dad. And so that was their situation. But the doctors at Denver's University Hospital it blew their minds that these parents were saying, we will not do a vaginal delivery because that kills the baby. And even though our baby is so tiny that he's unlikely to survive, we want to give him every chance. So now you, of course, have this situation of twins, which the whole situation is so difficult, and I'm so sorry. Is there more you can tell us?
Yeah, so after we had decided not to take the option of removing one so that the other would have a better chance of survival, after we told them no, that was not even a question that we would consider. She has been fairly stable until, you know, since we've been here. Mm. There's a chance that she could deliver at any moment. So I guess what brought me to call was the questions that they're asking us to answer. If the babies are born tomorrow, for example, you know, they'll be just 23 weeks. They would provide trial care for them. And then at that point ask us if we would want to continue their care or not, depending on how they responded. And I don't know that we stayed up every night talking about it and every day, but we don't have a direct Christian answer for that. Mm-hmm. We want these babies. We want to love these babies and raise these babies.
They're twins, if I understand, they are twins generally smaller than babies who are born as a single baby as compared to twins or triplets and so on?
I think they are smaller. I can tell you that right now they're measuring 1.2 pounds and 1.1, right, Kelly? Mm. 1.4 and 1.6 pounds.
All right. Now, preemies, I believe, are known to survive at 23 weeks, 22 weeks. But this is, it's difficult, of course, and their body weight is so significant. So,
right.
So I'm not sure off the top of my head what body rate gives the child a reasonable chance at survival. But what I am sure of is that you don't agree to kill one intentionally. You may deliver one and deliver the other to save lives, but not to kill one intentionally or kill both. Even in the case where mom has preeclampsia, for example, and mom will die. She gets to the point where she will die if the baby's not delivered. You don't do an abortion. That is, you don't intentionally kill the baby. You can deliver the baby with the hopes of saving mom and the baby, but very often we're not able to. We don't have the skills to save both. And so oftentimes the baby will die, but you don't intentionally kill the baby.
Correct. And that's exactly our standpoint on it. That's exactly what it is. We don't know. The hard decision would be if after they're born, if they aren't responding to care, when is it okay to let go? I know that I've heard you say it's okay to let sick people die.
Right, right.
But when is it, when are we just prolonging?
Right. Food and water are not extraordinary medical care. And so a general principle, and even in the scriptures, Jesus speaks of feeding those who can't feed themselves. So you don't let someone who's pro-abortion, pro-euthanasia, very comfortable with killing people to reduce suffering and solve financial problems, you don't let someone like that convince you not to feed your child. But if someone is requiring truly extraordinary medical care to stay alive, it's not immoral to let that dying person die. That is not immoral. So those are the decisions. Those are the basic principles. And I really do think it would be great if we can. In fact, we did get a call from Lolita Hanks. And after the show, Jamie, she would like you to call her.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Lolita she's one of the great assets to the body of Christ, not only in Colorado, but in America, in her role in trying to fight against this tragedy of our medical community becoming so base. And
yes.
Going down the path of Germany's medical community, where the whole medical establishment began advocating euthanizing sick people, handicapped people, the elderly, babies. And this is before Germany killed a single Jewish person. And they killed literally over 100,000 Germans who were in hospitals and in old folks' homes and so on, in asylums, as they called them. They began to euthanize juvenile delinquents, a 12-year-old boy who wet the bed. Three doctors, including a psychiatrist and two medical doctors, signed the required forms to euthanize, to kill a 12-year-old boy because he was wetting the bed. That's the reason they gave. We have those original documents. And so we live in a world where it's difficult to trust the advice of our doctors. Very difficult.
Yes, and that's why I wanted to call, because, and I think it's your telethon month, and just to kind of give you a plug, that's information that I don't think you would get very many places, except for this program.
Wow. Right?
I can tell anyone that's listening, I use your archives. I listen to them almost nightly.
Oh, wow, Jamie.
And the information just from your shows, you know, has provided me with just such a clear understanding of life situations, right and wrong, you know, and it's just such a valuable resources and tools that you have.
It's an honor, and now I'm sorry I didn't recognize you the moment we spoke, Jamie. So, okay, please tell your wife that we love you guys and are praying for you. And if you would, I'd like our call screener to put us on hold now, and we'll get you a phone number for Lolita Hanks.
Great.
All right?
Great.
And perhaps you or Lolita can keep us informed on how the babies are doing.
Okay, we will.
Thank you, Jamie. We'll put you on hold right now. God bless you.
God bless you, Bob. Thanks.
Wow, a difficult life often gives us difficult circumstances, but it is so comforting to be able to look to God who made us for direction. And not that God is going to speak to us in an audible voice, but he's given us his word. People ask for God's will. They pray for God's will. They want to know God's will is revealed to all of us through his word. When the Apostle Paul talked about whether or not it was God's will for him to do this or that, he's not talking about God micromanaging his life. He's talking about that he wants the wisdom and the commitment to honor God as he plans out his life. And so he's not going to force something to the point of dishonoring God or being unreasonable toward the Lord in order to do something he wants to do, but he's going to seek to honor God in his decisions and his actions, and by doing that, he will be in God's will. It's not as though God wants you to make a right or a left at the next stop sign, and if you don't, you're out of God's will. That's a very immature, superficial, and even superstitious way of understanding God's will. God doesn't have this hidden will for us, and if we don't somehow figure out the secret, we're going to marry the wrong person or get the wrong job or so on. God has revealed his will for us in his word. If you're a believer, you don't marry unbelievers. You don't marry an unbeliever. That's God's will. And you don't intentionally kill grandma because she's suffering and you're sad because grandma's suffering. And by the way, grandma's savings are being used up. And so the sooner she dies, the more savings are left over. These are the thoughts that go through people's minds. And when we follow God and honor him, then we're protected from all kinds of inhuman things that we ourselves may do. I'm just in the middle of reading a book by a Holocaust survivor named Martin Small. He's from a village in Poland, Maszet. And that was their shtetl, their village. And he has photographs in his book, Remember Us. You can find it at Google Books, Martin Small. It's an extraordinary book. And he has a photograph that was taken at a wedding of one of his relatives. And there are dozens of people in this photograph. And every one of those people, from children to grandparents, were slaughtered, were killed in the summer of 1942. Virtually his whole family was wiped out that summer. And they were killed by not the Germans, not the Nazis. They were killed by the Poles. The Polish people had grown up with Jews in village after village, city after city, with a seething, burning hatred of the Jews just under the surface. They would smile. They would go to class together. They'd play sports together. And then the Germans, a handful of Germans, rode into their village of maybe less than 10,000 people, maybe a third of the population Jews, and a couple dozen Germans come in, not a shot is fired. They occupy the city and they tell the Poles that they have to round up the Jews and kill them. So the first thing that happens is the chief of police of Maszet, 10 years earlier, he had married a young Jewish woman and they had a daughter. And the chief of police went home, got his wife and his daughter, brought them to the center of town, took out his revolver, and shot them both in the head and killed them both. And from there, it was just the most grotesque brutality, with scores of people in Martin's family being buried alive, marched in a group to the edge of the forest of Maszet, the pine forest, and a hole had been dug, and they had been shoved in the hole, shot, many of them alive, and covered up, and buried alive. And these were not the Nazis. Oh, the Nazis were the evil ones. No, the evil ones were the whole German people. They were all complicit in this murder. And then the Pauls, across the street from Martin Small's home, he was maybe about 20 or so when the Holocaust hit them there in Poland. Across the street was a Greek Orthodox church. And the Greek Orthodox church in town was known for the pastor and his family being kind to the Jews. Then there was the Polish Catholic Church, which was known for preaching hatred. And the members of the Polish Catholic Church slaughtered their Jewish neighbors, friends, that they grew up with one another. The Poles went to, after the chief of police killed his wife and daughter, one of the next things that happened is a gang of young Polish men went to the Greek Orthodox Church, went in, took out the pastor, his wife, and their kids, and lined them up against the white. You could see a picture of the church in Martin Small's book, Remember Us. Beautiful church. Lined them up against the white walls of the church and shot them dead right there because they had been kind to Jewish people. That was why. And eventually, Martin, he ran. He was one of very few people, a handful of people from his village, Machette, to survive. And he ended up living for months in the forest. You've probably heard of Defiance, the movie about, what was it, the Belinsky brothers, I think it was. Two brothers that had about 1,000 Jews hiding with the partisans and all, and the insanity of living in the forest. Martin spent time in two, because he'd get captured, spent time in two work camps and escaped, spent time painting a Nazi SD officer's home. He occupied a home that was formerly owned by a successful Jewish person. In the back of the home was a house that no one was allowed to go to, a small, like a maid's quarters or something like that, a guest quarters. And Martin Small snuck to that house and saw what was going on, brutal experiments against a child, a young boy, maybe 12 years old or so, to see what it would take to drive someone insane. Brutal, brutal, hell on earth type experiments. And Martin and his friend escaped from there one day when none of the guards were around, and they lived in the forest. Eventually, he was taken to another work camp, concentration camp, escaped, and eventually saw a train. And he was so starved and crazed, he saw a train, and he went to that train, and that was on its way to Mauthausen concentration camp, where thankfully he survived. But we're out of time. Bob and Yurt Live, please, if you can, support us so we could stand with you in the gap against those who would kill the innocent and deny our Creator God and Jesus Christ, who came to earth to save us through his death and resurrection. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Boy, do we need your help. If possible, please help us with our telethon goals, and our website is kgov, KGOV.com. May God bless you.